I am Paul Harris. Ian Geis and Dan Strauss here in the studio with me, and now news director Colin Jeffrey puts on his alter ego costume to become Showbiz Boy and talk about movies and showbiz of the week. Hi, Colin. How are you?
Doing well. How are you today, Paul?
I'm doing just fine. Before we get to showbiz, I got an email from a listener named Jane Wilkins who said, Paul, you have to see this story. And I'm not going to go into a lot of detail of it, but she sent me a link to an online recipe for ramen dishes, or ramen, I guess you say now. When I was in college, it was ramen. We ate a lot of ramen noodles when I was in college.
Somewhere along the way, it became ramen.
I guess it became upscale.
We did a lot of ramen in college, but we never had anything to do with noodles.
Oh, my goodness.
As I recall from my college days, you could get 10 packages of ramen for a dollar.
I think it's the same price.
Yeah. No, it's $1.10.
Oh, 10 for $1.10.
Now 11 cents per instead of 10 cents per, which is why I want to ask Jane, why did you send me a link to a recipe for ramen? How can I possibly make it for less than 11 cents? It has all the ingredients here that you're supposed to put into it, all the bamboo and the noodles and the broth and the pork and the eggs and all that sort of. First of all, I'm never going to put all that stuff in there. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to put the water in the pot. I'm going to boil the water. I'm going to put the ramen noodles in there. I'm going to open up the seasoning packet. I'm going to put that in there. And 11 cents later, I'm going to have lunch.
There you go.
It's going to take me just a few minutes.
I think that's more cost effective if you multiply the recipe by 10,000.
Well, that's how Nissan or whoever the companies are that make Nissan, whatever it is that make those things, that's how they can do it. But in her email, Jane says there's a new ramen restaurant in Clayton.
Really?
But if you don't want to go spend your money there, here's a recipe for how you can make it at home. Again, no recipe you send me is going to be less than 11 cents per serving.
I think it's really cool just holding that square thing of noodles and then you drop them in the water and it goes...
Exactly. Exactly.
It's cool.
Yeah. So I don't know why I felt I had to do that in the showbiz segment of the show today, but I did, and there's no way to stop it. You can't edit that out. That's done.
No, well, you have dinner before you see a movie or something like that.
Thank you for the link.
That's why Dan likes all the movies. He's entertained by ramen noodles dropping in water.
Oh, yeah. Heck yeah.
Movie was great.
Dan, what did you give that? 10. That's a 10 out of 10.
Oh, man, those noodles really blew up.
They are good. All right, what's new at the movies this week? I haven't seen anything. Have you?
I saw one of them, one of the big releases. We've got Risen and Race are out.
So that's two different movies?
Two different movies.
Okay.
I saw Race. Risen is a thriller about a Roman soldier being tasked with keeping an eye on the body of Jesus after the crucifixion. Mm-hmm. So there you go. It's like a thriller. Joseph Fiennes is in it. It's like a procedural.
Let me guess. He's in charge of watching the body, and then comes a certain Sunday, and he's not paying attention, and all of a sudden, the body's not there anymore!
You got it.
And that's the story of Easter, kids.
And then it's the Easter Bunny.
That's how it works.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Race is the one I saw, and this is the story of Jesse Owens. And
American hero, Jesse Owens.
Yeah, I mean, one of the greatest Olympians ever, and did it under amazingly difficult circumstances in 1936 in Berlin, Germany, while Hitler's standing there and watching, and clearly didn't think much of Jesse Owens and people who looked like him.
Because he was a black man, and Hitler was all about the Aryan race, and only white people can do something, and... So did the Americans purposely send Jesse Owens as a message?
Well, the movie... So before we get into that, I kind of have to describe what this movie is about.
Okay.
This movie is a little bit about how he came to be Jesse Owens, a little bit about what it takes to train to become an Olympian, a little bit about race issues in America, some about corruption in the Olympics, and some about Nazism being bad. And I don't say that glibly. The movie handles it glibly. Like, that's how it handles it. And if that seems like a lot of things to tackle in just over 90 minutes, that's because it is. And they don't tackle any of them very well.
Oh.
So that is the biggest issue. It can't decide what it wants to be. You see Jesse Owens as a young boy but just for a glimpse. And then he's college age and running. And then it talks about the difficulties of his college coach, Larry Snyder, who's played by Jason Sudeikis at the Ohio State University. Mm-hmm. Jesse Owens is played by a young man, Stephen James. We'll get back to his acting abilities later. But this is where it gets scattered, because it's trying to deal with the fact that he had a child out of wedlock with his childhood girlfriend, mm-hmm. who he promises to marry. Mm-hmm. But then after he becomes a, after he breaks three world records in one meet, he becomes the toast of the nation. He's the world's fastest man. He broke the record in the 100-yard dash, because that's what they ran in college back then.
Mm-hmm.
And so did the Americans choose him? They couldn't have not. He was the best. There was one other person who was sort of challenging him, but he blew up his leg, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
He tore his hamstring and couldn't go.
It sounds to me like there are two different stories that this movie might be trying to tell. One is the personal story mm-hmm. of who Jesse Owens was as a man, and the other one was Jesse Owens, the great runner who became the great Olympian, who stood up to the Nazism of Adolf Hitler in Berlin in 1936. Does the movie try to tell all those stories? And because it tries,
another story. And then and another story. And I'm not even saying that like tongue in cheek. Then the other story it's telling is that the American Olympic Committee and the American Association for Amateur Athletes or something,
mm-hmm.
they very seriously considered boycotting the Olympics because of the, when it, we, it was 1935 into 36, and people knew kind of what was happening in Germany, but weren't entirely willing to confront that. And so it tells the story of Avery Brundage, who was a architect and builder, mm-hmm. like on a huge scale, and Jeremiah Mahoney. Jeremy Irons plays Avery, and William Hurt plays Jeremiah. William Hurt's character is arguing that we should boycott, and Jeremy Irons is saying, we should go. We can't take it from these athletes, but really he has ulterior motives, and I'm not going to give away the history of, but if you study this, you'll recognize him, you know, as for what he is. And then it's telling the story also, once we get to the Olympics, of Leni Riefenstahl, who was a German filmmaker. She made propaganda films for the Nazis,
mm-hmm.
and she was making a film that was supposed to show Hitler's idea, the Aryan race was going to dominate the Olympics.
Yeah.
And that's not what happened with Jesse Owens.
Mm-hmm.
So it tells all of these stories.
That's too much. That's too much for 90 minutes. It's muddled.
Do you recall you saw a Bill Murray movie last year? Rock the Casbah, I believe?
Yes.
That tried to tell too many stories?
Yes, and didn't do any of them well.
And this is the same problem.
Oh.
That said, I mean, the race scenes are exciting, but I mean, we all know how it ends up. We don't remember people who finish in second place.
Mm-hmm.
He did well at the Olympics. So
won four gold medals, didn't
yes,
he?
Yes, yeah. Wins four gold medals. But people were applauding, like, in the movie theater as he won these. And I'm like, okay, I guess that's okay. It's exciting. Let's get into it. But when I looked back, I'm like, I don't know why you would applaud those. Like, because I don't know that was the point of the movie, that he was going to win races. The point of the movie was, I think, all of these other things he was dealing with, racism in the U.S. And but it was just very muddled. And to top all that off, you have Stephen James. And I don't ordinarily do this, but he's bad.
He plays Jesse Owens?
He's bad.
Wow.
He's a weak character. He tells his coach, Jason Sudeikis, I'm going to dominate. I'm here to become a world champion. I've worked hard. But he kind of delivers all of his lines like this, and it's just, oh, okay, yeah. And there's no... You're
Ben
like, wait.
Carson plays Jesse Owens?
I'm here to win a bunch of races and then run for president later.
He's just, there's no fire from him that's believable.
Mm-hmm.
He gets very angry a couple times, and Jason Sudeikis is just really sort of a middling dramatic actor.
Mm-hmm.
But he has to carry this, and so it just kind of, it falls at kind of every turn, and then we've talked about historical movies when they take modern day values and put them in there.
Mm-hmm.
They did this all the time. In this.
Mm.
In fact, there's one time when someone gives a clever phrase as to what Hitler can go do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I'm convinced no one said it this way in 1936. Like, they couldn't possibly.
People didn't talk that way 80 years ago.
They didn't talk this way, yes. Yeah. And they do that. All that said, it's still, his story is still good enough. Jesse Owens' story is still enough to move it forward.
Yeah, see, here's the disappointment. I didn't go to the press screening of this just because I had a feeling, and because it's February, and I have a bias against February movies and late January movies. They tend not to be all that great, and so I just didn't want to waste a couple of hours going to this, and I'm glad I didn't based on what you're saying here. But here's what the disappointment is for me. Jesse Owens is a seminal character in the American story. And the fact that he, a black man, went to Berlin in 1936 and showed up the greatest racist of our lifetimes, and even before our lifetimes, certainly of the last century, it was a great story. And it is a great story. And it's a story people should know because 80 years has gone by, and there are people who may not know who Jesse Owens was or what he did. Mm-hmm. And now they might hear about this movie, and it reflects badly on his legacy.
Yes.
And that's a bad thing.
It is. On the plus side, I always get very nervous when I see historical dramatizations, because people see it and think they're learning history.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not how it works. And here again, that is not exactly how it works. With the historical parts, but with his life, I don't know. I wasn't there. I wasn't his biographer, but his daughters have come out and said, this rings true. Like, this is sort of who we knew, the stories we knew. And so that's good to hear, that they treated his story with sort of the proper deference, because this, I mean, this is until, I'm going to say, Michael Phelps or Spitz, and I don't think they really hold a candle to what he did in an Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
He beat the best people in the world handily. These weren't bang bang wins. He set world records. This might be the greatest sprinter we've ever seen in America. And it's really says something about that.
Yeah. So on a scale of 0 to 10,
I give it a 4.
Race gets a 4.
Gets a 4.
How was Jason Sudeikis? Because you don't think of him in a serious movie.
You don't. And He's not a tentpole actor. He's not someone you're going to build a movie around.
Yeah, nobody's going to, I'm going to go see that new Jason Sudeikis movie.
Yeah.
But man, oh man, he would be really good, I think, if he had someone good to play off of.
Oh.
But he was being asked to carry this. He can't do that at this point, I don't think. He's not there yet.
Okay. So that's out today, and Risen is out today, and there's a movie called Touched with Fire, which has Katie Holmes in it. I don't know much about the movie, but I saw a headline that said this is her essentially giving the middle finger to Scientology over psychology. Apparently psychology and psychiatry are part of this, and as you know, in Scientology, those are curse words.
No.
So, you know, she apparently has pushed herself away from that. There's also another movie opening this weekend called The Witch. You know anything about that?
Nothing.
Okay.
Oh, I heard, what I heard was The Witch is really, really scary, and, set back in the,
1600s.
Yeah, 1600s.
17th century.
When the witches were really around, and they really set it up and had the period piece.
When the witches were really around?
The witches were really around.
Mm-hmm.
That's like a true story.
Not like Bewitched or Samantha Stevens.
That's obviously fiction.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, but but they said, anybody that I saw that I heard that saw that said it's really, really scary.
Yeah, I'm waiting for the sequel, Son of the Witch.
That'll be a good one.
What'd you say? Didn't even deserve that.
What'd you say, Dan?
No.
Oh, wait, that wasn't me.
No, that wasn't you.
Wow.
All right, other showbiz stuff.
Gaga.
We were talking last week about how it's nearly impossible to know what's going on in streaming TV shows now.
Yes.
Because while people may have heard of House of Cards or Transparent or Orange is the New Black, that Amazon and Netflix are coming out with so many new things on a regular basis, it's very, very difficult. And I apologize for not remembering your name, but a listener emailed me and told
Colin.
Me there's a website.
No.
Thank you.
He's not the one who emailed me.
Oh.
A listener emailed me and said there's a website called TV Worth Watching. And I went to it, and it has quite a few things about what's on TV now, what's on streaming now, and what's worth your time. So I recommend that to you. Now, speaking of that, I watched a thing on Hulu this week, which is Triumph the Insult Comic Dog's Election Special.
Mm-hmm.
You know this character that Robert Smigel has been doing? I guess he started doing it on Conan O'Brien's show when he was on NBC.
Yes. Yeah.
Long, long time ago. And if you don't know what it is, it's essentially a dog puppet. It's a glove with a dog's head on it that he puts on his left arm. And it, the Triumph the Insult Comic Dog is like an old-time Vegas-y, shticky comic who just wants to insult people. But over the years, the character has evolved to one where he can put him into real-life situations and interact live with people. And then they, when they edit it down, you just get the best of that. And he writes so well, and he writes so quickly on the scene, he and his crew, that they come up with some hysterical stuff. So I started watching this, and when I first heard, oh, it's Triumph's election special, nah, I probably can't take too much of that, so it'll be a half hour. Okay, that'll be fine. The special is 90 minutes long.
Yes, it is.
I've watched 25 minutes of it, and I had to stop because I have other things to do in my life than mm-hmm. watch Triumph. But I think I'm going to go back and watch it. It'll probably take me two more viewings mm-hmm. to watch a half hour at a time to get through this whole thing. But holy cow, you've seen it?
It took me three sittings because I'm like you. It's like I don't want to overdose on
yeah.
this. I think I'll stop. Yeah.
It is so funny. And he goes yes. after Republicans. He goes after Democrats. He goes after the media. He goes after the supporters of these various people. He goes up and asks some questions. Also, one of my favorite things in it is he hired
yes.
three blonde women to pretend that they work for Fox News because they look like your average generic Fox News reporter. And he puts them out in the field and they report on ridiculous things that they made up that Donald Trump said. And then they ask his supporters, what do you think of that? And they all act like they're real things that Donald Trump has said because can you say anything more outrageous than what Trump has actually said? Apparently not to his supporters.
Yeah.
And the reaction, and I remember, this is not Triumph in the, you know, the puppet doing this. This is real life women, and they have a microphone with a logo on it that looks just like the Fox News logo. So these people think it's really Fox News, and at one point they got one of the candidates, I think it was Rand Paul.
Uh-huh.
They got him to stop, and this blonde woman asked him a question and put the fake Fox News microphone in front of him, and Rand Paul kind of gave it a dismissive thing, but they get access mm-hmm. because you're blonde and you're on Fox, supposedly.
Yeah.
It's so clever.
My favorite is, I believe it was the Hillary campaign. People were ducking him, and so he went up to a woman who was sitting in a wheelchair and sent her around to ask questions of
yes,
people because
yeah.
they were ignoring him.
Right, a black woman.
A black woman in a wheelchair.
Who, by the way, doesn't... But here's the great thing. She doesn't need a wheelchair. They
yes.
got a, they found a black woman and put her in a wheelchair that she doesn't need and had her going around. And so, of course, all of the spin people for the Hillary campaign are more than willing to talk to her.
Yes.
And he gives her the most ridiculous lines to ask. And everybody pretends it's for real.
Oh.
That's how ridiculous politics has gotten in this country. It is very, very clever. Again, I've only watched the first
You'll
third
enjoy
of it.
It. It's the whole thing, I think, is pretty funny.
Okay, but it's on Hulu.
And it's free.
Yes, when you first told me about it, I thought, well, I don't want to pay the $7.99 that you now have to pay per month to get on Hulu, but it's on Hulu, the free side,
mm-hmm.
so anybody can go and watch that is streaming. Let me ask you about another thing that's streaming now. James Franco mm-hmm. is in a series. Is this also on Hulu?
It's on Hulu, but you have to pay. You have to pay at least the $7.99 a month.
It's called 11/22/63.
Yes.
Which is the date that President Kennedy was assassinated by mm-hmm. Lee Harvey Oswald.
Yes.
And what's the plot of this?
This is a Stephen King book. The idea is there's a small town professor in Maine who goes into the same diner every day. But one day when he goes in there, something happens. Essentially, the diner owner comes to him and says, I need you to walk through this hallway here to my cabinet in the back. And as he walks back there, he's transported back to 1960, a specific moment in 1960. And
From modern times.
The premise of this is Chris Cooper plays a diner owner. He's telling James Franco, the professor, you need to go back and save Kennedy. That's a butterfly moment. You can change this, and then when you come back here, you will see everything that has changed. But the catch is, unlike other time travel instances, when you can go to a specific point, every time that you enter this door, It's the exact same moment. So you undo everything you've done the previous time you were there.
So he goes back to 1960, and he has the ability to come back to 2015 or 16.
Yes. But everything would be undone. So he has to live for 3 years to stop the assassination. And here's where it gets fun. That's just straightforward enough. But Chris Cooper says there's more to the assassination than you think. So it may not be as simple as finding Lee Harvey Oswald and putting a bullet in his brain. You are going, there might be a conspiracy. So that's what this is really about. The first episode is right around 90 minutes. If you like science fiction or history, I think this is worth a watch.
Well, here's one thing I like about this. How many times have we talked about movies that have time travel in them? The Terminator Salvation last year had that in it. But even if you go to things like Back to the Future, why do Marty and Doc Brown go back to the day before something is going to happen, and then they have to rush, or the morning of the day that the lightning is going to hit the thing? Why do they go back to them? They have a time machine. They can go back to a week before and fix everything up before then.
Yes.
But they all, in all time travel things, it's always like, hurry up, we're running out of time. How can you run out of time when you have a time machine? Which is why I like the fact it doesn't go back to November 21st, 1963, and now you've got the Kiefer Sutherland 24-hour clock.
Yes, exactly. No, I believe he goes back to October of 1960, and it's just, it's going to develop slowly. I've read the book. It's a shade over 1,000 pages, I believe, the copy I had. It's a Stephen King, you know,
mega novel.
Yeah, it's a doorstop. And so they're going to take time, but I want to say it is an 8-part miniseries, and it's every Monday. They didn't release them all at once, so now I have to wait.
Now wait, is it going to conclude in 8 parts?
It should. That's my understanding, is they're doing 8 parts and done.
See, when you say, okay, they're going to take it slowly, I'm thinking to myself, I'm not committing 3 years to this show or even 25 hours to this show.
Oh, yeah. I believe 8. It's no more than,
Okay.
8 sounds right. But, yeah, it's close to 90 minutes. And, again, it's different from what you would see on network television in that they're not in a hurry to get from point A to point B. They're going to take time. And James Franco is good in it. I think he's goofy in a lot of stuff he does. I think he's good in this. It's a restrained James Franco. And if you're like me and sort of long for the days of, you know, being able to wear a suit and tie everywhere and not getting looked at odd, then hey, you'll like this.
I remember when you wore that around here and we looked at you like you were odd.
You like to wear a suit and tie?
Yes.
Oh.
It's a uniform. Then I don't have to think about what I'm wearing. It's a suit, shirt, tie. Shoes.
If you see me in a suit and tie, somebody's getting married or somebody died.
Yep, exactly.
Ian, what was the last time you wore a suit? Did you wear a suit the day you got married?
Yes.
Like, I didn't think about
it. That was it. That was the last. Oh, our reception right after that. A week later, we had our reception because we had our wedding out of town. Mm-hmm. So that was the last time.
Dan, what was the last time you had a suit and tie on?
I have no idea. It's been, holy cow. It's been at least 5-6 years, maybe longer.
Yeah, me too. It's just not a regular part of my life. But
no,
I wore a tie and coat yesterday.
What the heck?
Okay,
I know.
All right, fine.
I am not comfortable with any of that.
Yeah,
I like my jeans and just a shirt.
Yeah. Now, while we're talking about TV stuff, I saw the second episode of Samantha Bee's show, Full Frontal, on Monday night. And remember, I raved about it the first week it was on because I really thought she was establishing a new beachhead for TV comedy, especially topical TV comedy. And she hit it out of the ballpark on episode one, and she did it again on episode two. It's just great stuff.
I think it's going to be on par with John Oliver, what he's doing on HBO, just because they have the time. They're not producing 5 or 10 hours of television a week.
Or
they're
even 4 half-hour a week, like The Daily Show and Larry Wilmore and some of those.
They're producing 30 minutes.
Yes.
And, yeah.
Now, I want to ask you a question about this, because, again, you're in the news business, in the suit and tie news business. Both Samantha Bee and John Oliver are kind of following in the footsteps of what Jon Stewart used to do on The Daily Show, and to a certain extent what Stephen Colbert did when he was doing his character on Comedy Central, and that is they have research people on their staff who have access to video archives that apparently go back to the beginning of video archives. They're so good at digging up stuff, so that if a politician, somebody running for president or some other politician, even in a small town, says something now that they think might be a direct contradiction to something they said before, they go back to before and find that clip, and they show that.
Mm-hmm.
And both Oliver and B are very good, their staffs are very good about doing that. And that's how you get the comedy. You know, oh, this is what you believe now? It's funny you didn't believe that 3 years ago when you said this, or 9 years ago when you say that. Mm-hmm. And they do it to politicians on both sides of the aisle. But here's my question for you as a member of the news industry. Why doesn't the news industry do this?
That's a great question.
Why don't NBC, ABC, CBS, CNN, Fox, MSNBC, why don't they, I mean, particularly on the 24-hour news networks, you have 24 hours to fill every day. Why can't you have something in the course of your day where not only do you point out that the person A said this 3 years ago and is now saying this, but even more so, here's what I would love to see. I'd love to see some reporter, and just pick a politician, doesn't matter who it is, some politician says something, and then the news department of that network gets access to that person because they have relationships with all these politicians, and they take an iPad with them into the office, and they say, we understand that this is what you believe because this is what you said yesterday. I'd like to show you a little piece of video of you from 4 years ago when you said this, and then film their reaction to that and make them confront them with that.
Mm-hmm.
Why doesn't that happen now?
I don't know. I can give a sort of a thought on it. Al Jazeera America folded up shop. And if you ever watched it, they did the best news. They did hard news pretty much all day. They had shows that were an hour on one topic. And it failed because it had no ratings. And everyone looked at it and they're like, they didn't have any personalities on there. People watch personalities as much as they complain about these on cable TV. That's what they watch on those. And I think it's difficult to find a Samantha Bee, a John Oliver, a John Stewart who can do serious news and do that. I think.
But I'm not talking about doing it from a comedy.
I'm just saying from a serious point of view. The reason those shows are successful is because we can laugh at it. You can actually look at it and be like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this.
Mm-hmm.
And you laugh. It's a joke. I think if you were to just literally sit there and point out people's mistakes,
Or their lies, or their contradictions.
I don't know if there'd really be an audience.
There would be.
I hope so. That's just my thought. I'm with you.
Are you telling me if Bill O'Reilly did that, that people wouldn't pay attention? He's a personality. He's out there and he confronts people about stuff all the time. Why can't they have somebody on his staff going and saying, hey, look, here's video of what you said in 1999, and now here it is 2016, and you're saying the exact opposite. Or here's what you said in 2015, and now it's 2016, and you're saying the exact opposite. Those sort of things. I think part of it might be that all those news outlets, the big ones in particular, Fox, CNN, and the NBC, CBS, and NBC, I think that they're afraid to lose access.
I think they are, too. I think they would lose access to those people. Because those people see, it's like Elliot Davis walking in the room. Oh, we're not talking to you now. Forget it.
But they're bigger than Elliot Davis.
I know what you're saying, but I'm just...
No, I mean, I struggle with this because I think there is a place for it. I guess it takes courage on someone's part to do it. For CNN to say, here's 30 minutes of time, and I don't care.
I'm not talking about 30 minutes. This could be 5 minutes.
Yeah.
This is 5 minutes. By the way, here we have a clip of what this person said yesterday. Here's another clip of them saying the exact opposite 1 week ago. We went to her office and showed her this and wanted to get her reaction. Now, I think, Dan, you might be right that they might lose access to that person.
Yeah.
In which case, if I'm the news director, I say, fine, don't ever send us a press release again. We're never covering you. You are now never going to get coverage on here. If you won't let us cover you, fine, we won't cover you.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's anathema to any politician. Are you telling me the cameras and microphones won't show up? I have to let you back in.
Yeah.
And I don't disagree with
you. Why is it the comedy shows have to be able to do that? I mean, even what's the guy who comes on after Jimmy Fallon? Seth Meyers. Seth Meyers has started doing more and more of this stuff on his show as well. And it's good and it's clever and it's well done. But again, these are not news people. These are comedy people who are able to point this stuff out. I wish we would see more of that. Sunday night, NBC is airing a show that honors the work of James Burrows. Do you know who he is?
No.
James Burrows is probably the most famous sitcom director of all time. Listen to some of the shows he worked on. He directed every episode of Cheers. He directed every episode of Will and Grace. He directed almost every episode of Taxi. He also worked on the pilots of Big Bang Theory and many episodes of Friends and a lot of Frasier and Mike and Molly and News Radio and Laverne and Shirley. And going back to the 70s, he worked on the Bob Newhart Show and the Mary Tyler Moore Show. This guy for more than 40 years has been the go-to guy in Hollywood for a sitcom director. He was one of the co-creators of Cheers with Glenn and Les Charles, and that stayed on the air for 11 years. So, I mean, but NBC is going to have a two-hour primetime special this Sunday night honoring a sitcom director. I've never heard of anything like that, but I guess this guy is not anything like anything else because I've seen clips of some of the people who are going to be on it, and it's pretty much all the stars of all the shows I just mentioned. Everybody on Friends, except for Matthew Perry, who is off doing a movie, but people from The Big Bang Theory and Cheers and Frasier and News Radio and Mike and Molly, they're all going to be on there, and they all talk about how when they found out they were getting a sitcom, they were excited. When they found out James Burrows was directing that sitcom, they said, well, I've got a hit, because pretty much everything this guy's ever touched has turned to gold.
Yeah. So I'm looking at the list of shows. It's unbelievable.
This guy's won 10 Emmys and 5 DGA awards in a career that is over 40 years long. So that's going to be kind of a, I guess, variety or whatever it's going to be. It'll be on NBC on Sunday night. And then the last thing I want to mention, or two last things I want to mention here. One, I watched the premiere of Vinyl.
The new HBO series.
The new Martin Scorsese HBO series last Sunday night. It's about rock and roll in the 70s in New York, and it's co-produced by Mick Jagger. And it's just all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Just to give you an idea how bad the ratings were, I saw today there was a rerun of a 1973 Columbo that ran on MeTV on Sunday night opposite it that got more viewers than Vinyl did on HBO.
Pardon me. Am I bothering you? Am I bothering you?
One more thing. You don't have cable, do you? And then here's the last thing I want to mention. I've given up on this O.J. Simpson show on FX.
Why's that?
Because after watching the first episode, Ian and I were talking about this earlier today, I just can't live through it again. I just can't watch all the details of it because at the time I was on the radio and reporting on it and talking about it and watching the trial all day long and then talking about it all day the next day. Dan, you were on the air then too.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you're watching it, right?
I am caught up in it. Yeah. I'm caught up in it because it's all the behind the scenes stuff with the attorneys and putting together that, the dream team that, and all that. I'm into that and I'm just into it because I just can't believe that he got off still. Mm-hmm. You want to watch this and just see what happened and what made him get off. I forgot about Furman being a huge racist and how they made him out to be this massive racist.
Mm-hmm. So, well, the police didn't like Mark him Furman. Either. Don't forget that about Mark Furman.
Oh, they didn't like him, yeah.
Oh, they hated him. The other police.
Yeah.
He pleaded the fifth.
I know.
As an officer, he pleaded the fifth.
How is that show doing in the ratings?
It's doing well. It's picking up steam, actually, and I think it's going to if they continue making good enough episodes. I don't think it's on par with the first season of, like, American Horror Story as far as storytelling, but I enjoy it quite a bit.
Now, I'm curious because, Ian, you're a huge fan of Making a Murderer, that Netflix series, which was, again, real life. And they talked to the real people there about this guy and, you know, maybe he did what he did, maybe he didn't do what he did, etc. They really set it up. And you like that kind of real life stuff. Are you watching the OJ thing?
I've watched the first episode. I'm two behind. So I don't know. I was kind of in and out of the first one. It didn't really capture me as much as I thought it would.
Yeah.
And I think it's just because Making a Murderer had a lot of real life footage. And this is all just actors playing this. And I'm not huge as into Cuba Gooding Jr. as OJ. And John Travolta.
Oh.
I just can't get past him being a weirdo.
He's
to
terrible.
Watch him especially portray somebody, a real life person.
Yeah, I will say that the actors who are playing Marsha Clark and Johnny Cochran.
Sarah Paulson.
They found really good lookalikes.
And Christopher Darden.
He's
the guy that played Christopher Darden.
All three of those are. Yes. I think it's Courtney B. Vance who plays Johnny Cochran.
Yes, it is.
They are all really, really good.
Man.
I'm sure it'll continue to do well, but I can't sit through it again. It's just, I know it was 1994 or 1995, but it's still, when I watched it, it was like this happened yesterday.
And
it consumed everything I was doing for a year.
Wow.
I think once they get to trial, they found someone that looks very much like Judge Ito also.
I bet they did.
I think so.
I love the Cato Kaelin character.
Oh, like the Cato Kaelin guy.
That guy's great. I mean, what a fun role to play.
Yeah.
You get to play a bum.
We're out of time here, but remind me next week if we have time to tell you a Cato Kaelin story.
Okay.
All right. That's our showbiz segment for this week. I'm Paul Harris. This is the Big 550 KTRS.